Hi, everybody. I hope you are great. I just want to say, one, thanks for getting on board. Thanks for supporting this podcast as much as you can. If you think it's worth listening to, share it with friends. I want to grow this into something significant because I want to keep doing good work and talking with good people and sharing good ideas and good messages because I want to create a little bit of a ripple effect around the world in the tiny little pond that is Craig Harper, and hopefully you can help me do that. If you think what I'm doing and what we're doing is of value or service to others, and you can get on board that train, then I would love your support and I'd love you to do that. I also want to thank Max's, who is, of course, my sponsor for this show, Max's and Maxine's, Australia's leading brand of sports nutrition for guys, and Maxine's, of course, for girls. They're Australian-owned, Australian-made. They've been around for about 3 decades, and I use them all the time. I know people say that when they do sponsorship stuff, but I actually do. I use Max's stuff every day, and I find them to be amazing. Of course, I eat normal food and healthy food, but I supplement with protein powder. I have a few bars, I have a few cookies, I have a few drinks, and they are a big part of what I do and how I stay in shape. So now, if you want to get on board the Max's train or the Maxine's train, go to www.maxes.com or www.maxinesburn.com. Best supplements in Australia, I think, high quality ingredients, create great results, help me stay where I'm going, go where I'm going, help me stay in shape, and they can become part of your regime as well. So thanks, Max's. Thanks, Maxine's. Are we good?
We are. We are good.
I'm podcast number 2 for the day. I'm not sure how my aerobic endurance or my verbal endurance is going. I'm just having a cup of tea, a little bit of a caffeine stimulant.
Well, you did have a brief intermission between the two.
I did. I went to Monash and I was very academic. I had a meeting with my academic supervisor, Melissa.
You're a big student.
Took my pencil case, my sharpener, my pencils, my crayons.
Your lunchbox?
Got an elephant stamp. Oops. So there we are. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the U Project. Hope you're great. Are you good?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Thank you.
Your departure looms large.
It does.
I might run amok while you're away for a week and a half. I might get a new
Melissa.
What are
you going to get up to?
I might get a new Melissa.
You might.
Everyone's like, fuck off, don't say that. She's amazing, you dickhead. If it wasn't for her, that's true.
You could also get a puppy.
I might.
That would be a good idea.
I could get a puppy. I could get a puppy called Melissa.
You could do that.
We could have a show mascot.
I think this show, that's what this show needs.
I certainly don't think we do.
Yep.
So, everyone, I hope you're well. Sorry for that interlude there. So as some of you, most of you already know, a few weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago now, I put up a thing on Facey and Insta about the idea of some of you, a few of you perhaps coming on and talking to me, interviewing me and using it as an opportunity to get a bit of one-on-one coaching in the studio. And we interviewed recently, and by recently, 5 hours ago, young Shelby from Warrigal. And she was lovely and we had fun. And now we have young Kelly.
We do.
Not quite as young as Shelby, a couple of years older. Shelby was 21. Kelly's 24. No, she's not. I'm not even going to ask, but she's not 24, but she's definitely nowhere near as old as me. And as I said, we had a bunch, we had over 100 people, and this was, there was no real rhyme or reason. I was kind of just taking
it was just kind of random.
We had people from New Zealand. We had people from all over Australia, Perth. And anyway, Kelly lives not too far from here and she joins us. Hi, Kel.
Hi, Craig. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Talk up super loud or I'm going to yell it. Super loud.
Super loud.
All right, give us the Kelly Smith snapshot. Who are you? Where'd you come from? What do you do? Why did you want to come on the podcast? Any of those questions or none? Ready, no pressure, set, go.
So, yes, I am a little bit older than 21. What people don't know is that I didn't grow up in the same area.
All right.
I'm actually from Broadmeadows originally.
Broady girl.
Yes. So, a varied background right there. I saw your post asking people to come in and have this opportunity. And I thought, why not? There's been questions that I've wanted to ask you and I thought, well, here's the chance. And potentially they're questions that other people might have had as well.
When did you start listening to the podcast?
About 2 years ago, I think.
Okay, so just after it started, I reckon. Because we were one a weeking it for a while, then we 2 a weeked it. Now we 3 a week it.
I think initially I was watching your short videos on Facebook.
Oh, with Tommy?
No, just on your own.
Oh, right.
And
kind of Facebook lives.
Yeah, and taking notes from that. Mm. And I think I even like snapshotted one once and sent it to you because it was just really inspiring. I was getting all of these ideas. Mm. But from those ideas came lots of questions.
Yeah.
And then when it changed to the podcast, I started listening to that just basically on my drive to work and then started looking forward to it. Like, yes, I get to listen to it now on the way to work.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm the same with podcasts that I listen to and enjoy. Do you, like a lot of people that are into personal development and they listen to 72 different people, or they've been doing the personal development thing for fucking decades and they've got Tony Robbins t-shirts and they've got Unlimited Power and Awaken the Giant Within and 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and
all of that.
Have you, you've been?
No,
in,
none.
None?
None. I listen to 2 other podcasts.
Yep.
One regularly, which is the Osher Ginsberg podcast.
Yep.
I really enjoy that. And Plant Proof, which I listen to when there's something that interests me.
Okay.
And that's about it.
Are you a vegan?
No.
Vegetarian?
No. It's just interesting to hear different ideas about nutrition.
Mm, yeah. Good for you, dude. Yeah. So have you listened to Vicky Curiel?
Yes.
Both or just the first one?
Just the first one.
Okay. Second one's pretty good too. And also, have you listened to Paul Taylor, The Irishman?
No.
Oh, dude, you got to listen
that
up.
One's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was up last night?
Yeah, last night and 106.
Yeah, 106. Have a listen to him. He's the shit. He's interesting and he's a bit.
And by last night, we made the 29th.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, everyone. Sorry. Because Melissa is selfishly going and having
I'm
a rest.
Sorry.
Fucking hell. It's not all about you. First time in 15 years she's had a holiday. No, I'm glad you're going. Because it's good for you to recharge your batteries and just don't get in the sun or you'll turn into a bloody crisp.
Beetroot.
In fact, Kelly, don't you get in the sun either. That's good. So what's the stuff that generally for you interests you or resonates in terms of subject matter or topics or stuff that we explore? Is it the head stuff? Is it the body stuff? Is it the behavioral stuff or is it all of it?
All of it, really.
Right.
I think reframing the way that you live your life and just taking on board little bits.
Yeah.
There's some things that I kind of go, I could take it or leave it. But generally, it's all of it. Food and diet is a big thing that I'm interested in. Mm. A lot of the behavioral stuff, probably what resonates the most is the idea of the echo chamber that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And not surrounding yourself by people that would just tell you what you want to hear.
Mm.
So being challenged. Well, being challenged, which then changes you.
It's a really interesting idea of thinking about your thinking because it's a bit of a mind fuck in itself because how do I even do that? And it's really, you know, it's a self-awareness. I feel like I'm on repeat with some of this stuff. I apologize, folks, but it is. We're programmed. And so you sit in here in the studio tonight and did you tell me you're like 40 or something? Not that it matters.
No, I'm not like 40 yet.
35 or I don't know
37.
What 37. Sorry, I didn't know what you were. Anyway, so you're 37 and so you've got, my point is 37 years of programming and 37 years down the track, here we are on this day, sitting in this studio at this moment in time and you are on a cognitive level largely an accumulation of all your experiences and interactions and conversations and relationships, as am I, as is Melissa, as is everyone listening. That's not the totality of who we are, but that's a fair bit of who we are because that shapes, you know, even this moment in time, that shapes how you experience this conversation and this podcast and this process, you know. And then, so then the thing after that is going, well, how am I doing this? Am I doing this in an effective or an ineffective way? And am I telling myself stories that are productive or destructive? Or am I, as you said, reframing or framing this in a way which I'm creating problems or I'm creating opportunities or I'm having fun or I'm actually anxious? And is the fun because of me or is it because of the room and Craig and Melissa or is the anxiety because of me or is it, you know, so that's, and you can go down a rabbit hole with all that stuff, but I think the space to inhabit is just that, where you just start to step into, you know, that place where you're becoming a bit aware of what I am like. Like, what's the Craig experience like for others? What am I like without being the overthinker, without being insecure, or without being, you know, the people pleaser? So you got your questions?
I've got questions. And I think the first one for me, having discovered you, I guess, later than other people had. And once I did, I realized there was this.
You don't even have any notes. No, I'm so impressed.
Yeah. It's all in my head.
I've never met anyone who's come to interview me without questions. Good for you. Okay, sorry.
I'm just wondering when it first hit for you that you realized that people were paying attention to what you were putting out there, that people were following your advice and wanting to come and talk to you and get that coaching.
Wow, that's a really good question. I think a few times. So one thing I learned early on was in terms of the white, let me go there and then I'll answer some other questions. So I think, and I'll dovetail this back into your question, I think that social media as a platform has really evolved. Okay, so I used to have a blog, which is, it's not social media, but it's an internet media bloody communication tool, right? So I used to write plenty of, do you mind turning that off, Melissa? Sorry, that heater. I'm going to die of heat exhaustion. It's about a fucking 1,000 degrees in here. I'll be just sitting in my socks soon and no one wants that.
Trust me not to notice.
So, yeah, that's right, because you're like a lizard. It could be 120 degrees in here. You'd be like, nah, it's good. Sorry, Kel, back to your question. So what I realized was there was a time on the internet 10 years ago-ish where you could put up 10 or 20 or 30 minute videos and people would watch them. You could write 1,000 or 2,000 word articles on a blog and a lot of people would read them. And so I had 80,000 subscribers to my blog. So I would write an article and it might be a 1,500 word article. Nobody paid. There was no cost. It was all just like social media. And I would often get 500 comments, and that would be quite considered. Some people would write paragraphs, you know, and I would write, you know, and obviously I didn't respond to everybody, but I'd acknowledge and like it or whatever. And then their attention, as more and more blogs arose, started to diminish, and then I had to write shorter and shorter. And now we're down to this thing where there is so, you know, what Gary Vee says, we're day trading attention. So what we're doing is we're trying to get people's attention, especially if you're using social media as a platform for your business, right? So something that really surprised me was I did years ago, I wrote a thing and it was something like, it was one of my silly things, but it was something like, it's great to be in shape, but a fuckwit with abs is still a fuckwit, right? And so I wrote that. That was a post. That was a typed post. And it got, you know, I don't know, let's say X amount of response. And then the next day, a couple of days later, I wrote that post up on a whiteboard because I sent it to somebody. I can't even remember why, but I wrote that on my whiteboard in my office and I sent it to someone as a joke or whatever. And then I went, I'm going to put that on Facebook. So I put the exact same words and the exact same message on the exact same platform and it went crazy. I'm like, what? Mm. So instead of me typing a message in, I put up a picture of my handwriting. And for everyone who wonders, yes, my handwriting, right? I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying, because I get asked 5 times a week, is that actually your writing? So that's my handwriting. And I put that, and it went like literally 10x. So it went from X to 10x. I'm like, what? I went, okay, maybe there's something in this. So the next day I did another little 1 or 2 sentence message. I go, instead of typing it in here, I'm going to write it up there, which my whiteboard's right behind my chair. So I'll just write it there. I'll take a picture of it and I'll see it. Same thing happened. I'm like, what's this about? Now I'm sure maybe, I don't know, you'd know Melissa better than me. Do photos get more traction than text or?
Yes.
Okay. So that's part of the reason, but also people really connected with that kind of, modality of communication or something. But, and then I realized, and back before that where I would talk to people about things that could be complicated: anatomy, physiology, biomechanics, progressive overload, adaptation, subjective reality, you know, all this kind of human stuff, cognition, emotion, and just the way that we, behavioral psychology, essentially, cognitive behavioral therapy, all that stuff around how do we think and move and change. And I've found a way, probably because I'm not that smart, but I found a way to Craigify things where I would present some complicated shit in a not so complicated way. So, you know, you could talk about, for example, subjective reality, and you could talk for an hour and confuse the fuck out of people, or you could go, okay, so here we are. It's a Monday night. There's three people in the room, all in the same place, doing the same thing. That is, we're all involved in this podcast right now, but nobody's having the same experience.
Yep.
That's subjective reality. Your reality is not mine. Mine's not yours. Yours is not Melissa. Hers is not yours. Hers is not mine. So that's an example of, well, what does that mean? Well, that means we create our own experience. So your situation doesn't create your experience, circumstance, environment, events, other people. They don't create your experience. They influence it. Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense, right? So a long time ago, I think I realized that people would listen because I started to understand how to teach. And I had a very long apprenticeship because I started working in gyms at 18 and going, hi, Mrs. Smith, this is a bike, this is a squat, this is a deadlift, this is a dumbbell, this is a barbell, you know, tell me what you eat for breakfast. Okay, maybe cut back on the Cocoa Pops and let's do some walking every second day and some communicating for a job as a teenager, you know. And by the time I was 20, I was in my third year on the floor being a teacher. And even though you're just a gym instructor, you're still teaching.
You're still teaching. What I find curious about that is, so because there's that nature of instant gratification with Facebook and Instagram and the instant messages and people being able just to hit the like button, how does that then translate for you with people following through? Because there's, I think there's that really quick fix around social media.
Definitely.
And so if people are responding in one aspect to a quick fix, do you find that they're the same people that go in it for the long haul and actually stick to what they're doing?
Definitely not. There's almost no correlation. Not. I mean, okay, so anecdotally, you know, for me, you know, I'm well aware that that the kind of response something gets may not necessarily be indicative of whether or not people will take any action with that suggestion, idea, strategy. Well aware. So, but what I do, so how I manage that is I control my controllables and I manage me, and I say, and I've said this to trainers, I've taught this to trainers and other, you know, I guess coaches and mentors and motivators. And I even used to say this to my clients, if you don't get in shape, it won't be my fault. And they'd look at me like with disdain, and I'd go, okay, so here's the drill. I can't eat for you. I can't make your decisions. I can't get uncomfortable for you. I can't be resilient for you. I can't be motivated or inspired for you. I can't get uncomfortable for you. I can't walk to the pantry on Saturday night at 10 o'clock for you and not eat the shit in the cupboard and so on. So my job is not to change people. My job is to educate, hopefully inspire, influence, support, love, and hopefully empower people to use what they have. Because I believe most people that listen to me, most have got as much ability or more than me. And I don't say that because that sounds encouraging and nice. I truly believe it. I'm just better at getting more out of me than most people are at getting it, you know, their potential out and using it. So for me, my job is to inspire, coach, teach, lead, direct. And whether or not that's via an Instagram post or a whiteboard thing or a podcast or a, you know, a corporate keynote like I'm doing tomorrow in Perth, or it's a 2-day, or we just ran a 2.5-day kind of camp. 130 people. 130 people got inspired. 130 people, for the most part, I hope anyway, that's the feedback, had a good time, had light bulbs, had aha moments, had you know, some breakthroughs. They came because they wanted to change. They came, they had a common purpose, that is, they want to do and be different. Now, I can guarantee you that, and when was the camp? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I can guarantee you that the amount of people who have followed through the way that they intended to follow through would be less than 50%. It might be 10 or 20%.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
All of those people left that camp planning to do different. Now, I'm not having a go at them. Love their guts. This is human. The human condition is we all make decisions that we don't follow through on. And I can't be accountable for what you don't do. All I can do is say, Kel, what's your question? You go, well, how do I do this or that? And I go, well, my experience, A, B, C, D, and E. And if that happens, try F. And if you're not sure, get back to me. But only you can do the work. It's like nobody can make you successful. Nobody can make you resilient or disciplined or, you know, so I don't take the responsibility of others' results on, only my own results.
Only your own.
Yeah.
So in line with that, one of the other questions that I had for you was, who are you accountable to?
Mm.
In what sense? So when did you first kind of start reprogramming and saying, you know, I am the person that goes to the gym every day. I'm
Great.
The person that eats this every day.
Right.
How did that fall into place for you?
Very slowly over time, because I was not that. And I realized, you know, and I don't want to bore everyone again, but, you know, I was something of a fraud, because I wasn't trying to be a fraud. But, you know, my eating would alternate between 10 out of 10 and 2 out of 10. But I would behave as though it was 10 out of 10 all the time, because I was too embarrassed or insecure to be real with people and go, fuck, I'm like you, I struggle. You know, so when people would talk about what a bad weekend they had, I'm like, oh, well, let's do better. And I've just had a bad weekend myself. So, I think it's really, a lot of this is about being self-aware and humble enough and honest enough and practical enough to say, you know, there's just stuff that I need to deal with and own up to. So own up, look up, step up, you know. It surprised me over the years when I owned up to my own bullshit more and just went, look, I've had an interesting relationship with food, and I've not taken my own advice, and I've fucked up, and, you know, but I'm a work in progress, and now my relationship with food is, for me, as good as it can be for me. I don't really have issues around discipline or self-control with training or drugs or lifestyle or, you know, but for me, my hurdle was always food, but more specifically the psychology around food, managing my mind and my emotions around food, because like many other people, food was an escape, food was a drug, food was a social tool, food was something to get out of pain.
Interesting. I was listening to a podcast just before I came here today, and they were talking about the hormones related to when you deprive yourself from certain foods and how it's your brain just basically fucking with you and going, no, you want to eat that. You really want to eat that. And all you want to do is not eat that.
Yes.
So it's extremely fascinating, the psychology around food.
See, even that word there, you said deprive.
Yeah.
That's an interesting choice of words, food, deprive. You know, because that's how we tell ourselves, oh, I'm missing out, I'm depriving myself of, you know, I'm not saying don't eat cake, I'm not saying don't eat lollies, don't eat pizza, but nobody fucking needs cake. Nobody in the world needs cake. Nobody, not one of the 7.5 billion people need it. Nobody needs a lolly. Nobody needs pizza. Now, I'm not saying we should avoid it altogether, but I'm saying, okay, so, you know, we can get really practical with this too, in the sense that, okay, tell me what in your ideal world, what your body would look, feel, and function like within the realms of possibilities for you, right? So I'm never going to be 6'3 and look like a fucking Viking, right? Although that would be cool as fuck, right? So you just go, all right, well, you know, I just turned 56. And so what I want to do is be as strong and healthy and functional as I can with my genetics at my age, right? So then, with the food thing and the body thing more broadly, I go, okay, so what for you is success? You go, well, I want to be pretty fit, pretty strong, pretty lean, pretty attractive. Who doesn't want to be, right? Just kind of that. I'm not ridiculous, but I'm realistic. But for me, with my potential at my age, I want to be the best I can without becoming an obsessive weirdo. Cool. Okay, now what are the behaviors that are going to make that happen? Oh, this, 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 and this. Okay,
So you need to lock those in so that they're not sometimes behaviors, they're all the time habits. How do we do that? Well, we do that over time. You don't decide today and they're habits tomorrow. But the starting point is recognizing for me whether or not it's with my body, my business, my brand, my marriage, my whatever, my addictive tendencies, whatever it is, what for me needs to be non-negotiable so that I am creating the body or the health state or the business or the career or the marriage or whatever that I want to inhabit that is, you know, healthy.
So in line with that, the other thing that I think I've mentioned to you before in terms of what I wanted to learn from you is reframing situations. And yep. I think you've touched on it before when you talk about what's it like being around you? How do other people experience being around you?
Yeah.
And I guess in terms of reframing, is there a logical way that you don't let the emotions get involved with the situation? Like everyone has those times where they go, oh shit, they're talking about me or they're thinking this about me. Logically, they're not.
Mm.
It's all sort of building up in your mind. So what do you do or how do you reframe thinking in those situations?
That's a good question. So everything that happens in our head is either processing data, thinking about shit that's already happened, worrying about shit that probably will never happen. But all of those largely inhabit the place of story, right? Nearly everything going, unless we're going, should I turn left or right? Or will I wear the blue socks or the red socks? Or, you know, there's all that mundane stuff. Yep. But a lot of what happens, 70,000 thoughts a day, give or take, 95% of those thoughts we had yesterday, there's just a whole lot of storytelling in there. And then I go to myself, where did this story come from? Is this a creative byproduct of my manic brain, or is this literally what's going on? So the reframing is just really being able to figuratively, go and sit on another chair, or look out another window, or ask another question, or what's another word I could use instead of this word? But also, that's part of it, but also, you know, as you said, oh, those people are probably talking about me or whatever you said, something similar to that. Well, people are going to talk about you. People are going to talk about me. That's life too. And so, you know, we had, probably last podcast before this now, it'll be Shelby, but young Shelby who's 21, and she was talking about some of the pressure of being 21 and being a female and what people expect, and she was telling me off air, which I don't think she'd mind, that some girls that she knew that weren't that nice to her and all this kind of stuff. And I go, yeah, that's cool. People are not going to be nice to you. Some people will be great. Some people will be shitheads. That's cool. That's life. You know, and it's so funny that we care about the people that are shitheads sometimes, where we invest more energy in trying to get their approval or worrying about what they're thinking or saying. And I understand it. But that's one of our biggest challenges, is to be okay with the unmanageableness of other people and situations and unpredictability of life. And so, you know, when it's inevitable that me doing what I do, because I'm quite strong on certain things, and I go, well, this is what I, you know, and all I do, and I've said this 1,000 times, I don't assume I'm right. I assume I have an idea about what's right. So I go, this is my idea.
Yep.
This is my story. This is my experience. These are the strategies that I use. Here are some insights that I've had that I want to share. So if you want, one, listen to my podcast or not, cool. Two, read my shit or not, it's all good. And I'm not being defensive, like I mean this. But if I say something or Kelly says something or whoever's on the podcast, Melissa says something that resonates for you, that you think, fuck, I'm going to try that, or I'm going to put that into practice, or then take that thing for a test drive and see whether it works. But I have enough self-awareness now to realize when I'm starting to waste energy and time on what's he thinking, what's she thinking, what are they writing. Like somebody wrote something yesterday on Facebook, doesn't matter what it was, in response to something I wrote. And this person completely misrepresented what I wrote. And fuck, it bothered me, right? And then it bothered me that it bothered me. I'm like, like, you teach all this shit and look at you getting really fucking bothered. And I was really bothered. And so I had this visceral response. I had this emotional response. But in my head, like intelligent, cognitive, rational me is going, look at you, Mr. fucking high performance. Look at you, Mr. Mr. Coach. Yeah, yeah. Look at you. What are you doing? It's like this person is just fucking pushing your buttons and they're winning, you know? And so it's the human experience. And you're always kind of trying to self-manage around external stimuli, whether or not that's other people talking shit, whether or not that's the unfairness of life or the job or the situation or the weather or the government or the person in the car next to you at the traffic lights, or, you know, it's just an ongoing, and it's okay. It's because I think the biggest management project we have is not life, is not business, is not money, it's us. Because you're always trying to manage you in the unmanageableness of life.
It really is. And I think that's why what you say resonates with a lot of people and with other podcasts as well. There's so much that you can get out of them.
Mm.
And it comes down to that controlling your controllables and managing you within that. I think I look at you though and I think you've just got your shit together and I want to know exactly how and what's the process and when did it all fall into place for you. But you're a lot older than I am and therefore you've had that different experience.
100%. 100%.
It's all very individual, isn't it?
And I think if you – sorry to cut you off, but I think if you – you know, when I was 37, which was ages ago, I was probably not as evolved as you are now. You know, you're asking better questions than I was asking. You're probably more aware than I was, you know, and you're on the and look, I think you've got to be careful that being on the path, it all sounds very fucking wanky and trite, doesn't being on the path and, you know, self-efficacy and self-management and self-awareness and, oh, look at me, I'm just fucking working on me. Shut up. I want to punch myself in the face sometimes with this shit. But the truth is, you know, let's live consciously, tell a few dick jokes, lift some weights, fuck around, have fun, whatever your version of dick jokes is, ride your motorbike, talk shit, watch some Netflix, fucking lie on the floor with a doona, play with your puppy, fuck around, whatever. But don't wake up in 5 years going, my life still sucks, and still being mad at the world and mad at God and mad at your parents and mad at everyone while taking no ownership for your own fucking behavior or situation or circumstance or outcomes, right?
Yep.
So for me, I want to learn and grow and evolve. I just came back from a meeting with my academic supervisor, which I mentioned. I literally still sit in the room with this guy and feel like a dummy. But I could take him to a different environment, my environment. He might feel like a dummy because in that space, I'm pretty good and pretty confident and I'm pretty high level. In his space, I've got L plates on and I'm going, fuck, okay. And I'm all right with it. I'm all right with being the dumbest in that room. I'm all right with it because I am the dumbest in that room, in that space, in that scenario. So my job is not to be the smartest. My job is to learn and go, fuck, how? This is what I think. His name's Murat Yücel, the professor. Shout out to you, my friend. I think, how fucking lucky am I to be sitting in the room with this dude? That's what I think. There's nothing in me going, oh, fuck, this is uncomfortable. I hate it. I'm a moron, right? But I recognize what is going on, which is this guy is a very high-level academic and he's helping me through my PhD. But I also, so how I reframe it is I go, fuck, how lucky am I to be sitting here with this guy who gives a shit about me, who wants to help me with my PhD, who's got this vast amount of experience and brain power and knowledge and understanding that I don't have relevant to this process. And I go, I'm lucky. Like, I don't walk out going, oh, fucking how dumb was I? And I don't, you know, but, and I think that's, for me, I will always, you know, I'm not deluded, but I will find the good. I'll find the good. I'll go, what's good about this is, you know, like I've done gigs that weren't bad. And I come away and Melissa will go, how was it? I rate everything out of 10. I'll go, it was a 5. But I know how to make it an 8. I fucked up. I did this wrong. Or, you know, and so I also know if I go, it was a 5 and then I feel sorry for myself for 3 days, right? It's still not going to be anything higher than a 5, but now I've just wasted 3 days. And also contextually, when I look at people like Johnny, who I train, who, you know, you know, with who's been blown up and all of that, who you see at the gym, I look at John and I go, oh, yeah, by the way, Craig, you've got no problems ever.
He's a very inspiring man. I see him at the gym and I think whatever has happened during my day
yes.
is nothing compared to what's happened in his
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to see him there training with you.
Mm. I love him. And I think it's – and I again, I don't say this. I mean, you've seen me with him. I'm very intense and I'm very present and I love him. And I think it's a privilege for me to help him because I get to have a big impact on someone who's amazing on their life, and he's teaching me without trying to teach me because he's teaching me patience and pain management and optimism and gratitude and, you know, because and because he was taken to the bottom of the well, physically, mentally, emotionally, to where he was given the last rites. Like his family said goodbye. He's dying. Not he might die. No, he's dying, right? To be now back in the gym doing things and you know, you just – this is what I think is – it's like when I say I've tried being selfish, which I have. It doesn't work. And not that I think we should all be selfless because – but we can be generous and kind and thoughtful and still manage ourselves at the same time. And I think it's in that – when I know for me, when I have genuinely, not just saying this, but genuinely have a process or a purpose or a focus bigger than me, I'm a way better human being, you know?
With that, do you have a cutoff point of how far you're willing to bend and give to others of yourself?
Gee, these are good questions. Mm. You're very good at this. Well done, you. I don't have a predetermined cutoff point, but I, you know, there are lots of things like I get mountains of emails and mountains of SMSs. What do you call them? Messages?
Yeah.
On
what's Messenger. That?
Messenger, thank yeah. you.
And DMs and stuff.
DMs and all that. And obviously I can't answer them all because sometimes I'll get, you know, I might get in a week 200 different messages, more. But even 200, you go, okay. So if I spent 3 minutes, on which each. That's 600 minutes, that's 10 hours. That's 10 hours of responding and you just can't. And then every now and then I'll get someone who sends a message and goes, this is the third time I've contacted you. You think you're so fucking special where that it, like I'm like, okay. Like people will tell themselves a story like they only – you know, I have 70,000, 75,000 followers, but there's only one of me and I'm not special by any chance at all. But they, in the online relationship with Craig Harper, there's me and them. But from my side looking back, there's them and 70,000 others. And it doesn't mean I don't care about people. I care, but I also need to know, I guess this is answering your question. So I talk about this thing. You might have heard me talk about it. Your performance or your excellence threshold,
yep.
which is essentially how much of a thing can I do before I go to shit. And so, like as I'm now stepping into getting busy with academia, I'm still going to do my podcasts. I'm still going to share on social media. I'm still going to do my corporate speaking, but I need to manage my time differently. But what I'm not going to do is reply to emails unless it's life or death. I just can't. I can't just dispense personal advice.
No.
You know, I can't. It doesn't mean I don't like people. I love people, but I can't. That's just, I can't do that. What I can do is go, here are some thoughts and ideas and stories you never have to pay. Here are some podcasts you never have to pay. If you never come to an event, if you never spend a cent, I'm totally cool with that. Still love your guts. Thanks for being part of what we're doing in your own way. Truly appreciate you. But I just know that I can't. It's like I said to Melissa, you know, I probably need to go to bed by 8:30 tonight because I've got to get up at 4:30 tomorrow because I'm flying to Perth and back tomorrow. And like that's the messiness of my life.
Yep.
But people just sometimes, and not that my life's hard, but it's just busy. And so from the outside looking in, I think sometimes it's not what people might think.
I think also because some of those messages can be so deep as well. It's not just like somebody saying hi or, you know, how's your day going or that sort of thing or what brand of this do you recommend? Some of them can be really quite deep and yes. personal and they take emotional and mental commitment to work out what to, you know, how to respond to them.
Definitely. Yeah. And there are, look, I mean, you know, I, and this is no disrespect if anyone's listening who sent me something recently, and I'm cool with it. But I get very, very deep, dark, people who are in very dark places. Think of the darkest mental and emotional places. And I can't not respond. I can't go, oh, well, Brian, you know, all the best, knackers. You know, here's a fucking snapshot of my head. So there's a because I love people, I have to go, I have to sit, and which is cool. You know, I'm not. But you can't reply to that in 3 minutes, you know. So if I sit there for half an hour and write back to that person, which I often do, then I'm putting off other things, which is, that's also okay because that person in that moment is my priority. But then you get to the point where you go, well, how often do I do that, and how many, you know, because
where's the threshold for
where's the point, you know? And so, yeah. But anyway, yeah, so that's for me, that's kind of the, just figuring out how much, and not only figuring out your threshold for what, for excellence or being able to deliver, but then there's also just managing your energy, managing your time, and there'll be some days where I could probably be, like, for example, our recent camp where I talk Friday night for hours. Then I talk Saturday all day. Then I talk most of Sunday. So I might be speaking to the group for 20, 22 hours. That's to the 130. And then in between each of those 1 or 2 hour chunks, there's a line of people who want to talk to me individually. So when I'm not sleeping or eating a meal, I'm talking. And it's fucking exhausting, but also awesome. But I couldn't do that every weekend.
So how do you recharge from that then?
Fortunately for me, I have a really fast and easy off switch. Like, I don't get very stressed. Do I?
No.
I don't.
Teach me your secrets.
I really don't get very stressed. Like, you know, a couple of people want to catch up with me tomorrow. I'm like, I can't. I'm going to Perth. Oh, when are you back? I go tomorrow. Sorry, when are you going? Tomorrow. When are you back? Tomorrow. You're going to Perth and back in a day? I'm like, yeah, I've got fucking 8 hours on a plane to kick back. How good is... They're like, oh, that'd be horrible. I'm like, it's awesome. It's awesome. They're like, you're weird. I'm no, you're weird. You know what? I go to Perth, I talk for 1 hour. Is that the best fucking job ever? You know? And so I have, you know, I can sit in... you know, I don't mean to sound like a wanker, but I travel a lot. So I'm a member of the Qantas Club and the Virgin. So I can sit in the lounge and literally be in a semi-coma in 4 minutes. I'm not sitting there anxious. I'm not stressed. I could be, I'm speaking tomorrow at 1:30 in Perth. It could be 24 minutes past one and I'll be nearly asleep. And then at about 1 or 2 minutes to go,
yep.
I'm like, I just get up, turn myself on, go fucking boom for an hour, and then back to 55 heart rate straight up. I'm just so used to going, right, now I've got to be up and on. So I'm not pretending, but I'm just getting my energy where it needs to be. But I don't need my energy to be up 10 minutes before I'm doing my thing.
So that's just become your default. Yeah. Now. You know, that's exactly
and
how
I
you operate.
Literally, well, you're in my house now. So, you know, when we were outside looking at the bamboo, I said, that's my office up there. So next to my office is my bedroom. I've got another office, a commercial office where Melissa is based, but I do most of my work from here. And I literally will get up sometimes and I'll start working at 6 or 6:30 and then at 11 o'clock, like I said a couple of episodes ago, I'll go lie on my bed and watch fucking Everybody Loves Raymond. And I'm into it. Like 1 minute after I turn on the telly, I'm fucking there. I'm not thinking about work. I'm not stressed. I'm not worried. I'm in my jocks. It's fucking life is good. I've got a protein bar. I'm fucking wriggling my toes. I'm like, fuck, how good's life? Like literally.
So
in 1 minute, I can switch off.
That's,
yep.
That's quite amazing.
And also, you know, this is my other hack. I ride motorbikes, and when I am on a motorbike, I am never not having fun. I can ride my big motorbike, which is loud and terrifying. I can ride my little scooter, which people make fun of, don't give a fuck, right? I ride my little, I was going to say girly scooter. That's not what I call it, but that's what some of my friends call it.
Well,
right?
It's black. It can't be girly.
No, that's true. That's true. I ride my little scooter around. I have the best time ever. People are like, fuck, what can, like, don't you make good money and all this? I'm like, yeah. So, I don't know. I think also, Kel, because I literally, when I stepped out of owning gyms and when I stepped out of working for other people, I literally went, what do I want? Like, for me, what do I want to be doing, one, and what do I want my situation and my environment to be? So my house is where I work, and some people would hate that, but I live by myself. So it's not like there's four kids and there's toys everywhere and I'm married, and so I've got to navigate all these other human beings. I don't need to. If I want to work at 3 a.m., it's not bothering anyone. If I want to sleep till lunch, which I never would, but it's not bothering anyone. If I want to work 2 hours today or 20 hours today, most days I can just make that decision unless I've got other commitments, you know. So there's a really interesting book, which I've mentioned a few times on here, called Drunk Tank Pink. It's by Adam Alter, and he talks about how the environment and the circumstance and the colors and the situation that we work in impacts our nervous system, our endocrine system, our clarity, our vision, our creativity, our memory, our mental acuity, our emotional state. So, I mean, you walked in here and went, how fucking cool. Well, you didn't say, fuck, that's me. You went, how cool is this to have this in your house, right?
It's very cool.
And so I have literally a radio studio, the equivalent of a radio studio in my house. I have a really nice office upstairs. So I've just created consciously, after working like a beast for a lot of years, so I've consciously created an environment and a space in which I am most creative. And I also have outside, I have what I call the Zen Den, which is a bit messy at the moment because it's got shit in it. But for 4 or 5 months of the year, that's like an outside office. And I'm in the middle of trees and bamboo and, you know, shrubs and stuff. And so I can work out there. I can walk in here and do a podcast with someone like you. I can go upstairs and be in my own space where it's quiet and I'm really creative. And so I think, you know, not in terms of managing yourself from burnout and exhaustion and your energy levels, I think what you're doing is part of it and who you work with is part of it, but also your environment and consciously creating an environment that you like to work in. Like, this is going to sound silly, I know I'm talking too much, but even down to what you wear affects your mindset, affects your nervous system, your emotional system. If I get up, like tomorrow, I'm talking, like I said, to BHP. I said to the lady who was organizing everything, what's the dress code? And she said, it's really pretty casual. I go, so like jeans and a top? She's like, yeah. I'm like, fucking great. If I can wear something casual, I'm better at my job. I'm better when I'm wearing casual.
Something casual.
Yeah, then I can do it in a suit, but I fucking hate suits. So that's my own problem, but for me, because I can get up and literally walk around the house in a pair of cargos and a t-shirt and just bare feet. Like, I only wear shoes. I'd never wear shoes in the house, or rarely. I just wear bare feet 90% of my life and put on shoes when I go out. And that's just the way that I work best. And if I'm hungry, I'll eat. If I'm not hungry, I won't eat. So it's kind of a pretty free-range, organic existence. And some days I'll work 2 hours and I'm like, fuck, I need to lie down. And some days I'll work 15 hours and I'm still on fire. So I think, you know, your situation, your environment, your own biology will kind of give you signs and signals about what's optimal for you.
I said to a work colleague the other day, imagine how productive we'd be if we could just wear tracksuits to work with your UGG boots.
Yeah.
Everyone would be so comfortable.
100%.
100% we would be comfortable.
Well, a lot of what we would call, you know, tech companies, you know, Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and I guess Insta, and a lot of those more recent companies that are gigantic now, like, a lot of their workspaces are that. They are wear whatever you want. If you want to sit in a beanbag with your laptop and that's where you work best, sit in a fucking beanbag. If you want to walk around in your socks, walk around in, like, What they have done very intelligently, a lot of companies, is study how people work best. And how people don't work well is in a fucking cubicle with a fluoro buzzing over their head with someone standing over their shoulder in a dictatorial situation. That isn't how to get the most out of human beings. But, you know, we're so historically bound in our thinking and our operating that there's a lot of companies that still won't. And because a lot of it's run by 60-year-old people who don't fucking get it.
They don't understand that, no.
No. And so, like, even Melissa and I are business partners and, you know, so she works for me and with me. So she has equity in – I have a couple of companies, but the U Project is its own company. She has equity in that. And we don't work together. Like, the only time we ever work together is on a podcast. So we don't work together. We work together but not in the same place. So she has the option of working at our premises, which you've been to, which we use for – she has an office there, but she also has the option of working at home. And I personally, I don't give a fuck where she works. And I never ever go, I've never asked this question, how many hours did you work today? I've never asked that question. I would never ask that question because the less that I never try to control you, do I, in terms of.
Not at all.
I just stand that fuck, she tries to control me. If anyone's irresponsible. But you know what I mean? What I know is she's amazing at her job. I'm not saying this because it sounds good. She's amazing. She's efficient. She's creative. She's got a double degree in things that are relevant. She's highly driven. If I started to interfere, I would do more harm than good. So I'll ask a few relevant questions here and there. We'll, and that's the way that this is very unconventional. So she might be working at 10 o'clock at night, or she might be having a sleep at midday because she's been working since 4. And it doesn't matter. Or she might work 5 days or 7 days. She's a workaholic. She does have issues, full disclosure. But you know, I think we need to get out of, I know I'm talking a lot, but out of, I think not everyone, but a lot of people, when you can, if you can, getting out of the traditional, not particularly effective or optimal paradigm of, you know, clocking in at this time, clocking out at that time, ticking these boxes, sitting in this cubicle on this chair, looking at that screen. That is not the best way to get, even if you're a computer-based employee, well, fuck, have a laptop. Sit, you know, fucking sit over there. Sit over there. Have a stand-up station. Lie on the floor. Lie on the floor if on your tummy with your fucking laptop in front of you for half an hour. Like, who cares?
As long as the work gets
100%.
Done. 100%. So how long have you guys been working together for?
Oh, I don't know. Ask Rain Man, who knows everything. But we've been doing stuff together for 7 years, 8 years.
2014, I want to say. Yeah.
Is that all? 5 years? And the last couple of years and a bit full time. And I think it's really important in business that you, if you're going to have a partner or at least somebody that you work with a lot, that you get someone who's not like you. It would be a disaster if we had another Craig. The world doesn't need one more of me. We don't need another in the whole planet, let alone in the same fucking room. So
do you think then that relationships work better when you've got someone that challenges you?
Depends on the intention behind the challenging.
Bring something to the table that challenges you in a way that makes you maybe think a bit differently, be a bit more productive.
I think so, yeah. Grow. Look, I ask, we ask each other questions, and I have skills that she doesn't, and she has skills that I don't. And, you know, like, I'm going to give a really practical example. So, and you might get a tiny bit embarrassed, but it's actually a really fucking good idea. So next year, at some stage, in the start of next year, I'm doing a half day workshop at, what's that room that you love?
Convention Center.
The Convention Center. Which room?
The Plenary.
The Plenary, which holds about
1,200. It can go up to about 1,200.
Okay. So I'm doing a half day thing next year in Melbourne at the Plenary. And It's you know, so, but when you book that room, which is not cheap, let's just say that $1,200 at the exhibition centre, it costs heaps. Anyway, that's cool. That's what things cost. So Melissa goes, why don't we, I was thinking.
Because you've got to book it for the full day. Like even if you only want to do a 3-hour event, right, you've got to have it for the full
whole day.
Good point. Yeah. I didn't mention that. Good point, Melissa. So she goes, why don't we do your thing in the morning and do something else in the afternoon? I'm like, what? And then we had this whole conversation back and forwards, which was her originating idea, not mine. And then we developed this thing and where we went, oh, you know what? Why don't we get, say, 5 or 6 of the most popular people from the podcast and then let's do like a mini conference in the afternoon with the people that are just killers. So we get people that are, that everyone loved to listen to, that are real experts in their space, that are very good communicators, not just in front of a microphone, but in front of a live audience. And then, so we went from this initial idea to this thing where we went, okay, so now this is our working idea right now anyway. We're going to have my 3-hour workshop in the morning, then there'll be a break, and then in the afternoon, there'll be a separate event, which will be four, five or six, not sure yet, of people who have been on the podcast who are gurus and killers in their space, and I'll probably do the closing keynote, right? So I'll wrap it up and or I'll just MC it, not sure. And so people can come to my thing in the morning, they can come to the afternoon one, or they can come to both, right? Or they can come to neither. But that just started with a thought and then an idea and then, well, how would we? And so, you know, that for me, that's amazing because
that's a great idea.
She's also, you know, super efficient and all of those things, which is her forte. I'm not super efficient. I'm super inefficient. But on top of that,
well, efficient.
I'm good at writing and speaking. That's it. But I'm also, you know, it's great for me because, you know, as well as all the efficiency and systemization and productivity and management, like, then, you know, sometimes she'll also come up with a great idea that I didn't have. And I pride myself on my ideas, you know, but I didn't have that idea.
That's a really cool idea. So it's the U Project Live, basically.
Yeah. The U Project
That's exactly
Conference.
Exactly what we're thinking of calling it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we're just, you know, like, I don't know who it'll be, but like Paul Taylor is on recently. Everybody loved him. Everybody loved Cameron Schwab.
2 meter Peter.
Great. 2 meter Peter. We've had, I mean, everybody.
Nathan Beck's been really popular. Lots of different guests.
Steph Prem
yep.
is charismatic, Olympian, broke her back, you know, just a fucking amazing story. So many really, really cool people who I know. And we're going to do it probably a little bit TED talky in that. So I don't want people up there for an hour. I want people up there for maximum 30 minutes. So get up, be amazing, be funny, tell some stories, share some thoughts and ideas. Okay, get off. And now someone else is up. And we might do a Q&A at the end. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Or that's possibly cool. Even a meet and greet or something like that.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, so, I think that will be – that's a good idea of yours. I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. I'm excited about you know, it's funny, like I get excited about the idea – this sounds ridiculous – but of filling a 1,200-seat room.
Yeah.
And not because of the money. Don't even care. Like, I just go, wouldn't it be good if we could get how good would the fucking energy be if we could have 1,200 people in a room listening to these killers talk? So shit like that. For me, it's more about, and I've always been like this, the fact that we could do that. It's like when I worked on telly, and I worked on telly for 3 years on Channel 10, and I used to get paid, you know, for what I did, nothing. It's like I got paid really good money for that. But I never, I was just more, what was the word? Stoked that someone would want me on telly. Do you know what I mean? It was like, I'm on telly. They want me on telly. Yeah. I didn't care about the money, you know, and there's like things that, and of course money matters, you know, it's a resource, we need it. I get all of that. But for me, and I've said this a bunch of times too, if you said, well, Craig, you can speak to this group tonight, there's 10,000 people and we're going to pay you $1. Or there's a group over there, there's 100 people, we're going to pay you 10 grand, I would choose the 10,000 people.
Is that because you get a lot of energy from doing
that?
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. And for me, that would just be that would blow my fucking head off to be able to talk to 10,000 people live and share my shit and just be in that moment with all those humans, just creating energy and having – I would love that.
That's very interesting. So you're one of the two podcasts that I listen to regularly, so every week.
Yes.
And the other one is the Osho podcast that I mentioned. And so in his book, he mentions that he had very high anxiety and lots of mental health issues.
Yeah.
And yet he goes out and is on live TV.
Mm. Mm.
And so I got to meet him and I said, you know, how do you handle that? And he said that when he's out there, because he's the only person there, he's controlling it, and therefore it's absolute zen for him.
Yes.
Because he's in control of everything that he's doing.
Mm. I totally get that. And it's like people often ask me about how I prep for events and, you know, all that. And I go, I hardly prep. Like a camp I'll prep because I'm talking for a very – but I'll literally just have – ideas, points. Like there's no running sheet. The only running sheet is when the meals are. We've got to have meals at set times. Everything else is flexible. What time we get up, what time we go to bed, how long I talk for, how much is interactive, how much is Q&A, how much is coaching. Everything's – because I think like even with this podcast, what I'm very impressed about by you not pissing in your pocket is you've never done this, you've never spoken into a microphone, you have no notes. That is
it's impressive.
It's very impressive. It's very impressive.
It's probably because I've been thinking about it so much.
Right. Well, your questions are amazing. But I identify with that. Like I feel most comfortable and most authentic. Not that I feel like a fraud typically, but I feel most at home when I'm doing that thing, when I'm in front of people and I'm having conversations. And, you know, there's I was listening to Joe Rogan today, who was talking about the feeling, the experience of being in front of a live audience and crushing or killing, which is what he calls, you know, when you've got an auditorium of people laughing their fucking guts out. He goes, there is no better feeling that I've ever had in my life, you know, as in a personal experience, maybe having his kids, but in terms of, you know, and it's for me when I see not so much necessarily people laughing, but when I see that connection and when I see that where, like we've had some really good ones, but, you know, I think most of the experiences, I think for most of the people are somewhere in the positive space. You know, like this is probably, Melissa, you might have to edit
whilst
this.
Whilst you look for that.
Yes.
I was just going to say, like, there's something so inspiring is not really the right word, but when you've got something, a concept or an idea or something like that, I find it just gets me up every morning. Like, you visualize it so much before it actually happens. And yeah. I know that can sound a little bit corny, like personal development 101. But I think when you're so invested in wanting to see something come to life, like an event like that, and you visualize it so much before it actually happens that when it actually does happen, it's like, oh, I feel like I've kind of been here before because, you know, you've spent the last – whatever it might be, 12 months.
For so long.
Yeah, planning and thinking how's this going to come together and that sort of thing. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's a blessing to be able to have something that you do feel that connected with, I guess, or that inspired to be able to try and pull together. But yeah, that was just something that I was thinking when you were.
Yeah, I genuinely feel like sometimes I feel like like I figured a loophole in the system. Yes. I'm like, like almost guilty for, I go, like even with our podcast, these are sponsored. Like Max's pay for us to sit here and do this. Like fucking thank you, Max's. And thanks, Dayhab. And like thank you, because I would probably pay to do this. Like, you know what I'm saying? But like, so I got a message this morning. I won't say his full name because he might be embarrassed, but his name's Carl. Don't know him, never met him. In fact, he says, "G'day, Craig. You don't know me, but you've made a significant positive impact on my life. So I want to say thanks." So this is today. I saw you at a recent Canberra show and I've since heard lots of your podcasts and helped me navigate this thing called life. I love your stuff because it has no woo-woo, no dogma, no five-step formula, just practical real advice and insights. And you acknowledge how hard staying on track can be. You may enjoy the fact that after 10 years of personal development workshops, I think your day in Canberra gave me more bang for buck than anything I've ever seen. Please keep being awesome, Craig. Thanks. I love that for two reasons. I love that because that just kind of reaffirms we're on the right track. And more than that, because it's a dude.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love that men are going, hey, mate, I love you. You're awesome. And I go, well, fuck, I love you.
Yeah.
Like, I just love that men are coming around and being okay. Like, I send my mates hearts, love hearts, because I fucking love them, or kisses, don't care. You know, I'm like, we got to get over ourselves. Don't wait till someone's fucking dying before you tell them you love them. Oh, you got cancer. Oh, I love you. Fuck no. Tell them now. Tell them today, you know.
It is a very big lesson. So I think I've spoken to you before. So my dad did pass away from cancer. And one of the biggest things I learned from that was to always hug my friends and to not be so reserved in telling people how I feel about them.
Mm.
That was probably one of the things that I was able to take away from it. And you can't wait until
100%. How long ago did Dad pass away?
That was 2016.
See, and I reckon that would have been for you, tell me if I'm wrong here, like not the most natural thing to be all huggy.
Definitely not. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I struggled just to talk to people.
Yeah.
That I'm not really comfortable with. It took ages for me to start talking to you at the gym.
Well, that's right. Full disclosure to Kel, we've never spoken outside the gym, we're friends now, but it's not like we were friends. We had this relationship, but Kelly applied like everyone else. And then I figured out after I said yes who you were. So that's the connection. But can I be honest? It's not a bad thing. I think you'll laugh. So you've got two hats that you wear. One is, oh, I'm kind of interested in you. And the other one says, fuck off.
It depends definitely on my mood.
There's just something about. And it's not because you're not nice or friendly. It's probably because you're just reserved.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've been going to gyms for about 15 years.
Yeah.
And the one where we both go is probably one of the best that I've ever been to. It's got a lovely community feel about it.
Yeah.
But very much I go there every day after work with my headphones to switch off, recharge.
Yeah.
And sometimes I want to say hi to people. There's not that many. I'll say hi to Matt and Ange, who work there. Mm. I'll say hi to you.
Mm.
And that's about it. Because I've been going there for about 6 years now.
Mm.
And I don't know anyone's names.
Mm. But that's okay. You don't have to. But I'm going to just chuck in a little irrelevant breadcrumb while you think of your next question. And that, Melissa, I'm going to tell you and the good folk is that. So Kelly was doing some leg press a week or so ago. And she had a plate. Have I told you this?
No.
She had a plate either side. So she had 20 and 20. And I went up. And I think, was that your kind of, that was your top weight generally, 20 and 20?
That was my top weight.
Yeah. So I went up and I went, I'll make it a bit heavier. And she's like, what? And I didn't even suggest it. I said, put some extra weight on. So she put some more weight on. She put on a 10 and a 10. And then, or did we go straight to two plates?
I think your words were, hey, Kel, put some fucking weight on there, princess.
Yeah, probably something. Yep. Probably something, you know, empathetic like that. Anyway, bottom line is I put on two plates each side. Didn't charge her. Fucking so generous. So
did
she had
count
one
the reps whilst you were at it?
Well, I did more than that. So we put on, so we went from one plate, 120 kilo plate to 220 kilo. So we doubled her typical heaviest weight. And then she did one or two sets? Two sets.
It was a 12, a 15, and then a 20.
Yeah. So she did a set of 12 double her best weight, a set of 15, then a set of 20.
Yep.
And she could have done, if her life depended on it, probably 30 or 40. And I even laid down on the floor next to the thing, as I do. I put my foot on the bracket just to make sure she wasn't going to kill herself. and just good. Guided her through. Were your legs sore?
I couldn't walk for 2 days.
Yeah, I don't care. It was great. Yeah,
that was great. And so I've been doing it ever since, and I feel stronger.
Yeah, well, funny
it's
that.
Great. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So you've been fucking around 6 years. It You're
was,
welcome.
Yeah, well, thanks. As I said to you, it was the kick in the ass that I needed.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good sometimes because, you know, it's very easy with everything to get in a kind of status quo. You know, where you're kind of doing the same thing. And I've said many times, and we're digressing a bit, but the vast majority of people in gyms, the vast majority essentially do the same workout or a version of the same workout for fucking ever and then go, why is my body changing? And it's not changing because don't need to because you keep doing the same thing. So it's good to see you doing something different. All right, where are we at for time, Melissa?
108.
All right. Do you have another one or two that you...
One or two. With your PhD,
yeah.
What else are you expecting or wanting to get from it?
Oh, gee, that's a good question.
They've been really good questions tonight.
Yeah, that's good. So for me, I actually said this to my supervisor tonight, this afternoon. I feel like... not that I've peaked, but in terms of my, you know, obviously I've been to university anyway. I did a degree in exercise science. Then I went on staff and I was a university lecturer for a while, blah, 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 blah. So I've dabbled my toe in academia, but I wouldn't call myself an academic by any stretch. But I feel in terms of... Not like I've exhausted it, but in terms of my kind of on-the-job learning, my experiential learning, my face-to-face conversations, doing shit, trying shit, failing, succeeding, you know, practical life learning, I've really explored that in a big way. And I think for me to put myself in that environment where it's, I said to Murat tonight, it's like I'm in Germany and I don't speak German and everyone speaks German except me. And they're smart and I'm smart enough, but I don't speak the language. And so it's for me, it's just a challenge. And I do some things really instinctively and I'm not sure what, but I feel like it's going to change me and help me. And so I will, obviously it will help me, you know, going through the, so I'm exploring the relationship between creating lasting change and what we call motivation. That's the very layman term explanation of my thesis, but or my question that I'm asking is essentially what's the role of what we call motivation in terms of creating lasting behavioral change? And that's what I'm exploring. But I know that exploring that in a deep academic research-based way and going deep on neuroscience and deep on the brain and deep on all of the variables around this will help me learn and understand things that I don't currently understand as well as I could. So I'm very good at the anecdotal and the stories and the ideas and the, I still, of course, I think have a pretty good understanding, even on an academic level, but I just know that it's not an opportunity for me to go deeper. And I think perhaps, you know, if, you know, my goal is to be finished in 3 years because I'm doing it full time and I haven't discounted the idea that I might then do some academic lecturing, which would pay me about a 20th of what I currently, you know, but not because I think the idea of me lecturing to honors students or whatever undergrad students and in about, you know, it, I think I could maybe add value and maybe, or maybe not, I don't know. But, you know, it's like, it's not like I want to do this thing and then walk away necessarily. So it's, plus for me, it's just, it's new and it's a challenge and it's different and it's uncomfortable. And that's where I grow the most. I grew the most when I went to uni the first time. I grew the most when I opened my business. You know, I grew the most when I went overseas and did stuff. I had a business when I was 19 years old called Classic Screen Printing. Then I fucking made up everything as I went, you know.
Screen printing.
Yeah, I designed logos and T-shirts and what we call them windshitters or hoodies and I printed them and I packaged them and I heat treated them and I delivered them and I'd have I've told this story before, but my dad's a legit artist, and I'm definitely not an artist, but I'm pretty good at design and, you know, kind of that graphic space, like ideas around that, what would look good, what wouldn't look good. And so I taught, well, I won't bore everyone, but there's quite a story around that, but I taught myself to screen print. I got taught kind of, and then I developed it. And then I opened this business from my house. So I was working in gyms, and I also had a screen printing business at the same time. And before I sold that business, I was also working in pubs at night. So I was getting punched in the face for $10 an hour. I was screen printing and designing shirts and bloody tea towels and everything, and working in the gym. I had three jobs. And I was also a born-again Christian at the time. So I was just thanking Jesus in between T-shirts and reps and sets.
So what did the tea towels look like then if you're a born-again Christian?
The tea towels?
Yeah.
Well, they're just, they just don't just print it.
Thank you, Jesus.
Hey, it's all right. That was fun. I learned a lot. Just what whoever's logo it was. So I would, you know, companies would want, I didn't do many, but I did do some T-shirts, but companies would want their logo design, or I did stuff for concerts and bands, and, you know, like local bands would want their own T-shirts made and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, but for me, that those years, and like when I first opened Harper's and I had no idea how to really to run a business, to administrate a business, to, you know, anything legal, anything to do with council and permits and how to employ people, how to fire people, how to do tax. Like, I had no fucking idea. I was just a trainer. But then all of a sudden, oh, no, you're a business owner, you're an employer, you're a tenant, you're all these things. And I'm like, I didn't want to be any of those things, but now I am. So for me, I've always kind of thrived in that space. And I get bored doing the exact same thing, same way.
I find that really interesting. So I have 2 degrees.
Mm.
One is in visual communication.
Mm.
So it was a lot around film and TV and things like that. And also communication design.
Mm. What's communication design?
Mm. So graphic design.
Okay.
So, and the course was communication design at Swinburne.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I'm fascinated by logo design.
I'll teach you how to screen print. You can have your own little business.
Start making tea towels.
Well, Kel, you've been awesome. So thank you very much for spending some time with us on the U Project.
No, thank you for having me. What a great opportunity.
Nah, you're amazing. That, like, seriously, gangster. Do you want people to follow you on social media or not particularly?
I don't mind. It depends on whether I'm, you know, in my happy space or my fuck off, don't talk to me space.
Yeah, well, that's right. I think we all have that.
Yep.
I went out with a girl years ago, and she knows this, God bless her, Tammy, who's now happily married to someone much better than me, good choice you, with kids. And when I first met Tam, I've told her this, she used to train at my gym, and when I first met her, she was a flight attendant. She didn't train with me, trained with one of my dudes. In fact, she was a friend of Russ and Tara's anyway, blah, blah, blah. And I just thought she just permanently had the fuck off face, and I'm like, this girl's really pretty but fucking unfriendly. And then when I got to know her, she wasn't unfriendly at all. She was really shy.
Yeah.
So her fuck off face was me misinterpreting the I'm shy face, and please don't look at me too hard because I'm also a bit embarrassed. So what do I know? What's your Insta?
My Insta is at Kelstar.
At Kelstar.
My Insta.
Good for you. I might take a picture of you sitting behind that microphone. Melissa, you have a good holiday.
Thank you.
Kel, go home and have a good dinner, do a few star jumps, and I'll see you at the gym.
See you at the gym.
Oh, I love this job. What a great job. Just talking about stuff, interesting conversations, interesting explorations into the way we think and behave and choose and do and create on planet Us. This wouldn't happen without the support of my major sponsor, Max's and Maxine's. So thank you guys for providing great supplements to Australia for over 3 decades, and to me personally for a decade or so. My abs and I thank you. If you need to get in shape, if you want that part of that process to be well supplemented, then head to maxes.com.au or maxinesburn.com. That's kind of the ladies area. Maxes is more the dudes, but there's a bit of interchange there. So I know lots of girls who use Maxes products as well, either or both. Thanks for your support, Maxes, and thanks for being a part of this, everybody.